Welcome to the BrianMadden.com November podcast. I see this is our title, Jack, in our talking points document that we share. Are we just doing monthly podcasts now?
Well, actually, if you look at the pace, last time we were on the podcast, that was with Tim and Benny. And before that, we did the podcast from VMworld. So, yes, we are on a monthly pace now. But the good news is that the iTunes feed and the RSS feed is all actually working again. So those of you listening can listen to this in your podcast app of choice.
That's cool. So yeah, so you'll note this this did not make it to the website as live, and that's because we decided that live is a lot of work and very few people actually listen to it live anyway. And so we haven't abandoned live podcasts altogether. We're still going to do them for live, or you know, for events and things like that. And maybe if there's big news that we need to immediately get on and opine about, but you know, us, we don't chase leads and go for the scoop like some other sites. So it's a lot easier if we do this offline and then post it. And but don't worry, we'll still do some live ones from time to time because we do like involving the chat room and things like that. Hopefully too, that we're not going to have a November podcast, you know, or our monthly podcast forever. I would still like to see this happen every other week or so. I say that, of course, Jack, we're at the end of the year when things tend to really slow down. So maybe next year we'll do a bi-weekly thing or something.
Yeah, we already pushed this back one a couple of weeks for scheduling purposes.
What with the World Series and all?
Yeah.
I did you watch it all? I know that you're not a sportball guy, but it was the Indians. I thought maybe you'd...
No, I watched plenty.
So you're on the West Coast. This is not Gabe and Jack's, like, the BrianMadden.com sport podcast. But so I ended up going to Cleveland for game 6 and 7 of that. And those games start at 8 o'clock on the East Coast. And I don't know how people do it. And, I mean, my dad always complained about that, but I just figured he was old. And yeah, didn't want to stay up late, but holy crap, dude, it took like 3 days to recover.
Yeah, that last game, like, what about people that have to get up and commute in the morning?
That was, I think John Smoltz said, all the bosses out there watching, please be patient with your employees tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that was one of the many reasons that we had to push this back, but we're back today. I'm a little sadder that the Indians didn't win, but, you know, good for the Cubs. Right before we decided to start this podcast, there was an email that came through, and Jack, I don't know if you want to hit that now or if you want to put it off until later, but I really feel like this was sent just for the purposes of our podcast. And that is that Sanjay Poonen, the former GM of End User Computing at VMware, has now been promoted to the Chief Operating Officer of VMware. And then Sumit Dhawan has taken his place as the GM of EUC. This is like Larry King. Jack, thoughts?
Yeah, so, well, my first question is, you know, so Sanjay was always, he was Mr. EUC, and he was great, and I think we can all agree that a lot of really great stuff happened under his tenure. And so, you know, I'm just thinking out loud here, having a more EUC-focused person at the very top of, or the nearly the very top of VMware, you know, my thoughts were, one, I wonder how much EUC talking and promoting he still is going to do. And then my next thought was, hey, this is the first time that I can think of that an EUC person is, you know, one of the top C-level people at VMware. Is that true?
Yeah, I think that has to be true. I mean, you know, for the longest time, in the era prior to Sanjay, and maybe two eras prior to Sanjay, EUC was an afterthought at VMware. They did it just because it just seemed like they wanted to make Citrix mad because they didn't have 100% focus, not that the company would, but they just kind of cared about EUC, but still tried to treat it as if it was just another arm of the rest of VMware without focusing on it entirely. And so at that point in time, definitely nobody in the C-level had any focus on EUC besides, you know, Scott Davis, who was the CTO of EUC at the time. But even then, though, just the way VMware was run, it was way different than it is today.
Yeah, and remember, there were times when even 2012-ish, we wondered, are they just going to get out of the EUC business? And of course, for the last two or three VM worlds, we've been, I think at each one of the last two or three VM worlds, we've said, wow, what a change this is with how much attention EUC is getting now. And one of Sanjay's big things was, he's talking about, okay, Sumit is the person to take the EUC business to $2 billion. And that's referencing that earlier this year, they said that, I think it was based on their bookings and their various rates and stuff, that this year is expected to be essentially a $1 billion year for EUC for them.
Okay, so they haven't yet hit 2 billion. They're expecting Sumit to get to 2 billion. So that's so if you read this right, like Sanjay takes a new job, promotes Sumit, and then says, next year we expect you to double your revenue. So good luck. But you know, as much as it's growing and as much stuff as they're doing, I don't see why that couldn't be possible, especially with the push that they've got, you know, all the stuff that we've talked about coming out of VMworld and things like that. Honestly, I can't think of a better guy than Sumit to take over that role. I am surprised to see Sanjay, as much of an EUC and technology kind of guy as I got the impression Sanjay was, to for him to move into chief operating officer role, that seems, you know, it seems a little bit, I don't know if I could wake up in the morning and become a COO of a company, you know, just because that's I feel like that my life is just spreadsheets then. And I'm telling people, no, you can't do things because I'm in charge of the operations, not, I'm not out there trying to like drive new business and build new products and things. Now that said, COO of VMware is, you know, a stone's throw away from CEO of VMware, which is a different thing altogether. And so I sure that Sanjay has big plans, and if this is on that path, then more power to him. But on that note, Sumit taking over that role, can't think of a better guy for it there. And I think VMware's in good hands, or the EUC side at least is in good hands.
And speaking of their EUC side, so just a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago or so, you wrote an article. What was it? Was it VMware has drawn even with Citrix or?
No. It was. I was careful with that because I don't want to start a shitstorm. but the question is more, when can we say that VMware has drawn even with Citrix? Because I really wanted people to comment on that. And if you're listening this on Tuesday, November 8th, Election Day, by the way, we will finally have new commenting. It should make it easier to comment on our website. It spurred this article didn't spur the discussion that I was hoping it would, but my point is that, you know, we've gotten to the point now where VMware, apart from very nuanced use cases here and there, where maybe VMware has a slight advantage over Citrix because they've dedicated resources to it, and also on the flip side is also true where Citrix has specific use cases where they excel because they've dedicated resource to it. We're nearing the point, if we're not already there, where these things are just basically equal. Now, you know, Citrix is going to come out and say that there's, you know, specific cloud differences between them, and VMware is going to say that, you know, their customers are telling them they don't need to focus on some of this stuff, and so they have created other features. And so there's a lot of very small things make up the differences between VMware and Citrix. But from a higher level, you know, if you're looking at that 80-90% of use cases out there, I think we're pretty close to the point where VMware and Citrix are the same. And we got that impression coming out of VMworld too, where, you know, that, let me back up. We said years ago when VMware started to get into this and they decided to just all out compete with Citrix, they had the easiest product roadmap meeting ever, because they walked in, they taped a piece of paper to the whiteboard that listed all of the Citrix product feature matrix, and they said, do that. And then that was it. The meeting broke, and they set off for the last 3 years to go and do that. And so they've pretty much caught up. And that's not... I feel,
well, and
like, go ahead.
And here's the question when it comes to product roadmap and looking at features, and specifically for your article. Actually, before I get to that question, we do have to take an aside and point out, because after you posted your article, Gabe, I don't know if you remembered this at the time that you were writing, but I specifically remember an article that Brian wrote maybe about this time, or maybe a little bit earlier, last year in 2015, that he said by the end of 2016, VMware and Citrix will be neck and neck. So,
well, you know, he had to quit, but finally he got one right.
Yeah, he went out on a high note. I seem to remember in the comments.
I should have said
that,
I knew that, Jack, and just not linked to it on purpose, or didn't link to it on purpose.
Well, and you know, in the comments of that article, people were arguing like, okay, but there's this specific feature and this specific feature. And I think one of the things that prompted your article a few weeks ago was that VMware announced support for Skype.
Yeah, exactly. And this was just talking to people at VMworld. That was one of the last remaining big features that Citrix had that VMware did not. And when they announced that, and I went, and that caused me to go back and look at the differences, and there are differences. Don't misunderstand me, but the differences are becoming increasingly minute in scale and scope and number of users and use cases affected by the features.
And for differences, you're speaking right now specifically for desktop virtualization products, right?
Yes. Yes, specifically.
Because we can also step back and look at this as the whole EUC story. So we compare Zen Mobile to AirWatch and ShareFile to, well, AirWatch Content Locker isn't really emphasized as a standalone product anymore. But then you also have VMware Identity Manager versus whatever Citrix is doing in identity. And that's actually a really good question, because maybe considering the way the last year has been, maybe we shouldn't be thinking VMware versus Citrix. We should be thinking VMware versus the Citrix and Microsoft alliance.
Yeah, that's a good point. Though, you know, now VMware has their alliance with Amazon. So the round two is about to begin, I guess I should, is probably the way to put it. Cause you know, Citrix and Microsoft relationship is based a lot on Azure and about, services. And that's what the relationship with VMware and Amazon or AWS is as well.
If you want to kind of draw a circle around this, I would say that this is, that article was with regards to on-prem desktop virtualization. And so, there's a little bit of cloud stuff in that article, I believe. I talked about Enzo and Workspace Cloud and things like that, but that's still kind of in the context of, with Workspace Cloud, you can manage on-prem workloads, and with Enzo or with hybrid mode, you can't do that yet. But VMware announced that they were going to do that too. And that's I went through lots of different features that they had. I even went through like the Citrix Zen App and Zen Desktop compared to VMware View document that they have online. And there are, like I said, they're just becoming increasingly minuscule. And what I want to say though, before we get too deep or distracted here, is that this isn't bad news. I'm not saying that Citrix is doing anything wrong or poorly, right? I'm saying that VMware caught up to them, and because they are catching up, not have caught up, but you know, it's awfully close. If we just say they caught up, that's fine. But I just don't want to get accused of like being a VMware homer here, because I think that Citrix is still like Citrix was the goal the entire time. Like that I'm joking when I talk about that product roadmap discussion, but not that much, right? Like I'm sure that that's. They had deeper meetings about it, but that was the goal, was to catch up and do everything Citrix is doing. And then to try to, once they got there, to try to do it better than what Citrix was doing. And so this whole time, Citrix has just been doing what Citrix is doing. And VMware is getting all the acclaim and all the buzz for, oh my God, they can do apps now. Oh my gosh, they can do this now. They can do that. And so VMware gets all the buzz, but really all they're doing is drawing even with Citrix. It's like watching a horse race and the guy that was all the way in the back comes up to the front and now it's going to be a photo finish. And so the guy that was in the lead the whole time doesn't really get any credit for being in the lead the whole time. It's the guy that came back from the very back of the race and got up front that's getting all the buzz. And so what's going to be interesting here is, like you brought up before, Jack, with Citrix's relationship with Microsoft and VMware's relationship with AWS, what's round two going to look like? Because round one apparently was a draw. I mean, Citrix had a good lead for 20 years, but you know, we're to the point where they're both fine. What's next?
And the thing is, whereas VMware's relationship with AWS is purely on the infrastructure side, Citrix's relationship with Microsoft, there are a lot of interesting things to unpack there. And we sort of had some of these conversations back around Synergy when we first heard these announcements, such as the still upcoming combination of Zen Mobile and Intune that's going to work together so that you can use Zen Mobile to do some device management and Intune to manage the Office apps. And then there were, you know, other things involving NetScaler. And because some of my questions have been like identity, for example, which we're seeing that, Microsoft with Azure AD as well as VMware with VMware Identity Manager, they're really making their IDaaS platforms so that they can be the central part of their whole EUC portfolio, which really makes a lot of sense when we think about the technologies. But then the big question is, like, what is Citrix doing in this space with the IDaaS idea?
And the answer is, IDaaS Apple's desktops as a service platform?
No, that is not. So with federation and single sign-on and SSO and identity to hold everything together.
I know, we're just running out of acronyms.
Yeah. So the question is, you know, Citrix has always talked about some SAML capabilities and some federation capabilities with NetScaler. And, you know, I have on my agenda to, I'm going to be meeting with them sometime in the next few weeks to really get an idea of what their intentions in this space are. But kind of the fact that I have to set up a special meeting to know what their intentions are, as opposed to it being a core part of their EUC messaging, sort of gives an indication of where the emphasis
where
is.
Where we're at in the process. Yeah.
Yeah. But if they continue to more bring together the best of Citrix and Microsoft EUC, I mean, obviously, Microsoft with Azure AD they're putting a lot of work into that. So why would they try to compete on that?
Let me ask you this. This can be either Citrix or Citrix plus Microsoft in the world of enterprise mobility. How does this stack compare to AirWatch? And I honestly, to be fair, this question should also include MobileIron and others. But like just in the Citrix versus VMware thing, like how do those two things compare?
In the Citrix versus VMware thing, well, so first of all, one big difference is that AirWatch now is going their big physical Windows 10 management efforts, and you know we've talked about this a lot at VMworld and since then with all that they're doing to manage Windows 10 in an interesting new way, and we've written about that extensively. And I know Citrix has MDM support for Windows 10, but as we've been writing for years, or well, not years, maybe a year or so, you need more than just MDM for Windows devices, obviously.
Right.
So that's that's one of the big challenges. Now,
but what about pure play mobility at this point? Not the Windows 10 stuff, but I mean, is it also a neck and neck kind of thing where like, they'll both get you where you want to go, or are there certain key differences?
It depends on the use cases, and you know, this is where maybe don't quote me on all these things. I realize I'm on a podcast, so I'm already quotable.
And I put you on the spot too, so you know your answer could be it depends on the use cases too, and that's all right, because you know, I grew up as a consultant. That was a legit answer, and people like nodded and bought my services then. But
I would look at, you know, so obviously on the MDM side, it's more of a matter of, are they up to date with the latest APIs from each platform? You know, and on the Apple side, that means all sorts of things like the Apple School Manager is like another set of new management APIs. It's more complicated by that, but it's a bunch of stuff that Apple puts out that the MDM vendor has to support. So it's stuff like, are they keeping up to date on all of that stuff? But the other question I think would be, like their containerized email clients. VMware has Boxer, and Citrix has all of the, what do they call them now? They changed it.
I know what you're talking about though.
Yeah. So it'd be a question of looking into all of the precise details of what certifications those apps have and what use cases can they support. Then.
Like we're getting down into the minutia of the thing, but like feature for feature wise, they're pretty even on the high level side.
On the high level, yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. And so as you dig in, then certain use cases will kind of dictate which way you go in that regard. But you know, so even in that regard, there is some the playing field is pretty level at this point. And so it'll be interesting to see then. I think that where services are phase two or round two for on the desktop side, desktop vert side, you know, I think phase two for the enterprise mobility management side is probably going to be this unified endpoint management, unless you see something else coming. I guess identity as a service, IDaaS, that's probably on there as well. That's probably even more immediate than unified endpoint management, isn't it? Because I mean that UEM is going to take a lot of selling to get people to switch. So IDaaS is probably more immediate.
If you're using Box or Salesforce or Google Apps or Office 365, we've talked about IDaaS quite a few times on this podcast over the last year or two, but it's always the one person in the IDaaS space told me that their calculation is you take the number of cloud apps you have and the number of users that you have and multiply those together. And if the result is more than 1,000 or so, then it gets to be where having an IDaaS of some sort can save you a lot of time. Because obviously the passwords and the account provisioning and all that fun stuff.
The thought of that number, like 1,000, seems too high. It seems like it might be worth having it a much lower number. I can see that. That'll be the next battleground for that.
IDaaS is, you know, for single sign-on and implementing multi-factor authentication. If you look at all of these big security reports, like look at the Verizon Data Breach Investigations report, which is now the one for 2015 is now 6 months old or so. But again and again, all these reports say that so many breaches can be traced back to compromised or default or weak credentials. And again, nobody's going to say a single technology is a silver bullet for protecting yourself against breaches, but keeping better control over your passwords and your credentials and your users and everything is one of those things that sure can go a long way.
All right. So I know this is not one of the things that we plan on talking about, but, and maybe we've talked about this before, but I don't think that you and I have. We were talking last week about your getting your girlfriend switched over to using like 1Password, some sort of password management tool. You and I both use 1Password. Since I got it, I mean, it took a little while to get kind of roped into using it, just because, you know, it's kind of a pain in the neck and you have to go through and think about all these other sites that have, because it's not the Yahoos and the Googles of the world that are the ones that are posing the huge risk. I shouldn't say that because you just got hacked, but yeah. but it's more like, you know, BuckeyeJokes.com, you know, that the forum that you registered for in 1997 that still exists and is storing their passwords in clear text, and you were an idiot back then and used a 4-character, like, you know, 1234 password, you know, when those guys get hacked, and then, you know, they can work their way in from that way. Like, I mean, you know, to go through and to the process of beginning to use password management as a single person is a real pain in the neck. And I kept thinking, like, my mother really needs to use something like this, because she has the, like, 1Password for everything, and she insists on doing it even though I tell her, you know, how wrong it is. I've gotten her maybe to doubt. She's got like 3 passwords now, and even I can't keep them straight. But I couldn't ever, you know, ask her to use this. Like, it has to be, if you're going to roll this out, I picture every user in an enterprise like my, as if they were my mom. And so to do something, you would have to, you just have to make sure it's completely idiot proof. Not that my mom's an idiot, but, you know, like, it has to be, it can't be as complex as using 1Password and things like that. It has to be way simpler than that. Right.
I mean, okay.
Can you imagine giving your mom 1Password?
No, I can't. But here's the reason why it's different. So, you know, 1Password is password vaulting. And of course, yeah, that makes it easier to, that makes it easier to have unique passwords for every different website. But, you know, a lot of these identity management, you know, when they talk about doing identity management for all of the big popular, SaaS apps, they're not doing
password vaulting. They're doing federation.
Yeah, they're doing federation. So you only authenticate to, you know, to your IDAS, and then instead of sending the password over or having an individual password follow these apps, it's just sending over a token.
Right.
And so the equivalent of this in the consumer world is, of course, all the different apps out there that you can log in with Facebook or log in with Google. And it's a funny thing. Like, 4 or 5 years ago, when an app said, like, log in with Facebook, I'm like, that doesn't, like,
yeah, no effing way. I still do that for Facebook. I'll use Google.
Yeah. Well, so, and indeed, there are still some apps that do that in, like, there are some apps, like, I think this is what was the big deal with Pokemon Go when it first came out, is that it was asking, it wasn't doing federation, it was asking to vault your passwords. And
right.
So, and so the key part is that an application that's actually using your social identity in a real federated way, you're never going to be putting your password into that application's UI. It may pop up a web view, but that web view is going to be going back to Google or Facebook or whichever one that you use. But even there's obviously a lot of education that has to be done, and there are a lot of apps that don't support it, or apps that that try to vault your Google password, like that Pokemon Go, and that's obviously, you don't want to be doing it that way.
Well, and that's kind of where I was going with that, because, like, I'm aware that these are two different things that we're talking about, but there are things out there that say that they'll do identity management that are really just password vaulting, and, you know, there might be a little bit here and there, but at the end of the day, it's still just, you know, it's pretty rudimentary stuff compared to what some of these other services, some of these other companies are doing now. And so I feel like we've talked about it a lot in 2016, but I feel like this is the thing that's going to be huge in 2017, is going to be companies finally coming around to doing it this way.
Oh, yeah. And fair? Yeah. And absolutely. And if you look at the numbers of if you look at the numbers of SaaS applications that support that actually support SAML, it's like 700 or 800 apps out there that support real federation with SAML. So that means that they're not vaulting your passwords. They're doing everything in a good way that they're supposed to. So that's like, in terms of the enterprise SaaS apps, I mean, can you name 700 enterprise SaaS apps? That's like most of the ones that you've ever heard of.
Oh yeah. It's the ones that are cliche to even name now that I even hate running it down, but yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of them these days, they're starting to support user provisioning. So you can do, so instead of having to have, you know, a Salesforce admin log into Salesforce, rather it can be, the user provisioning can be done entirely through, you know, through your IDaaS platform.
Which is that we've been wanting that forever. I mean, since we started thinking about this on a more global scale, identity, provisioning, deprovisioning of these accounts. It's about time. I mean, it's been around, but yeah, it's good to see that.
And it took Salesforce and Office 365 and Box getting huge for that to finally happen. But, you know, this is the thing. And so this actually leads me into the other thing that has been on my mind a lot recently. So first I mentioned how, you know, better password management and better safeguarding of credentials is obviously a really important thing for security. I wrote an article, it's probably 2 months or so now. The article was why smarter identity and access management will be awesome and what it is, or something like this. So this is the idea behind this, is that, hey, as long as you have your one central IDaaS system, whether it be Okta or Azure AD or VMware Identity Manager or whatever, as long as you have that one system behind, doing all of your users' authentications and authorizations for all of your apps, what else can you do with it? And so some of these things seem kind of basic, but when you think about it, they're also super cool and revolutionary. The classic example is like if the user logs into one of their applications in one part of the country, and then 10 minutes later, they're logging into an application from the other side of the world. Well, then you know that their account is probably somehow compromised, and then you can challenge them for a second factor, or you can lock out their account until you know what's going on. And so that's just one example, but think about all the places that can go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is also... I just knocked out my headphone cable. So keep talking, Jack, because I can't hear anything.
Okay, yeah. So some other places that this can go are some other places. Great. So some other places where you can go is, imagine, what else is huge in 2016 right now? Artificial intelligence and machine learning. And I guess a few years ago it was big data. Now it's artificial intelligence, but whatever you want to call it. If you're looking at all of the users' logins and you can see what their usual pattern of application logins is
across all applications that's killer. Or
for example, other things that you can do is if it's integrated with your EMM platform, so you know the device's location from the EMM platform, or you can use MDM to push a certificate down to that device. And so then you're using that certificate to log on instead of a username and password. This is super cool stuff.
And they're using this from a security perspective too, because they can see, well, wait a second, this person never logs in between these hours, and all of a sudden they're using this application. Something's going on here. Or from different areas of the country, different applications that they don't normally use. There's a lot of different data points that you can extract out of this. That generally bolster everything affected, everything it touches.
And then this goes even farther, because with Azure AD and And this is what there were some presentations out of Microsoft Ignite where they're talking about, okay, Azure, you know, Microsoft has so many data points about because they have all these users of Bing and Windows and Xbox and everything. So they have their identity protection service that's just another layer of security that you can add in and help protect your identities. And so all of this stuff, it's like from a security perspective, both like the GeoWiz AI stuff in the background and also just the fact of using federation versus usernames and passwords. And from the end user perspective, you know, if we had certificates on our devices and that meant we could actually easily log into our apps without having to remember our passwords, like I'm just thinking that from all angles, this just seems like a win. Now, of course, I'm just waiting for someone to say, okay, here's what's hard about this.
There's going to be the not in my backyard people, the people that don't want that kind of functionality for some reason, the tinfoil hat people. There will be detractors for sure, but so all of this stuff is as awesome as it sounds. Maybe we're dealing it out in measured doses instead of all at once, which is, I mean, that's how we've done every other technology that's ever come up. But so, you know, it'll be interesting to learn. I think we're going to find out here in the next year or so, like what the prevailing deployments look like, which will be really interesting to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of these things are functionality that's out this year, or it was just last year that VMware started linking Identity Manager and AirWatch, and some of these other things are just coming together now. One other thing I'll mention, so like other things they can plug in, like there's cloud access security brokers, which if you look at the website, I've written a few articles about that. There's even, I'm planning on writing soon, a lot of these identity and access management systems, they have various options for controlling access to on-premises apps as well. Like there's the Azure AD on-prem app connector. So that means that all of these cloud-based policies and intelligence, and like we're saying, the smarts to identify the user's pattern of when they access various applications and such, hey, well, now you can turn around and maybe use that for access to some of your on-prem apps too.
Yeah, that'd be great. I wonder what the integration is going to be like on the admin side to make that work, or if that's just going to work versus, you know, having to wire all sorts of stuff together and hope that it all continues functioning after you do it. That's just me being, I'm the old guy that's gotten burned in the past on stuff like that, but this is a whole new world. So, I'm optimistic that just works.
Yeah. And well, and we've had a few Bri Forum speakers, Peter Dalmans is one of them, who he gave some sessions on Azure AD, and I think there was somebody else as well. So there are people out there now working on it. I've seen tweets coming through today that the Microsoft MVP Summit is going on this week. So I'm sure they're talking about some really cool NDA stuff right now.
Yeah, stuff that we'll never hear about until it comes down the pipe. We'll have to reach out to our MVP friends and see if there's anything they can tell. But they always say no, but you know, you just hope that you give them enough beer and they slip. But so far, they're pretty ironclad. That would be really interesting to be in on that, to see what Microsoft is planning, because I've never been more confident that they actually have a roadmap for a lot of this stuff. And it's probably pretty cool based upon all the other stuff they've done recently. So hopefully, you know, that stuff will trickle out over time too, and we can get a little taste of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned before we started this thing that there is some Mac stuff that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
I'll write something about Mac management, but that's really just because Parallels once in a while does something that's you know, kind of interesting or plugs into SCCM or something like that. So, but you've written about Jamf before, I think, right? A few times.
Yeah.
And by the way, if it's not clear that I work from home, I every time my dog barks, I can see the green bars moving on my mixer here. So if you hear a pug, that's my dog.
Okay. So yeah, Jamf, you know, they're known as being, I've heard one people say that they were the Cadillac of macOS management. And the thing about macOS management is that, you know, around 2010, 2011, when we were first talking about FUIT and BYOD and people bringing in iPads and iPhones, and Macs were kind of right up with there as one of those like new problems that we have to deal with. But of course, that had kind of been going on for years and years. And still, like despite all that, there was never quite the feeling of a fire drill around Macs than there was about iPhones.
Okay. Agreed.
So even as even since mobile device management came out for Macs in 2012, things had kind of been pretty quiet for a while. You have education and other traditional Mac heavy verticals doing their thing, but like, look at us. We just have our rogue Macs, and we're all on different versions of Office. And
oh yeah, even in my last real job back in the mid 2000s, I mean, when they were just talking about doing something with Jamf at the time, and really like they joined them to the domain because they could, but they really didn't do anything with that other. I honestly, like, I don't know what the hell they did that for. File shares, I guess. But other than that, yeah, they were pretty much a wild, wild west. If you had a Mac, you could do anything you wanted to. So basically that was my goal day one. I'm like, I got to get a Mac. And so I finally found one. But yeah.
Yeah. And for the most part, that works out. Although I know some Mac users that some of the Mac users are very technically savvy. I know that also not all Mac users are very technically savvy. So sometimes there are people
that's the line for all the classes at the Apple store.
Well, yeah. And I can think of people with some people with rogue Macs that like haven't updated the operating system since they bought their device because they just think like it's a Mac. I don't have to worry about that. Or they're just like having trouble getting Office working and keeping that run smoothly. But so anyway, so what's changed in the last year or so? It was about a year ago that the IBM came out talking about their big program to start allowing users to choose Macs instead of Windows laptops. And Jamf was the management software that they use for those. And so fast forward a year to the present, up at the Jamf Nation user conference, the people from IBM, they were there speaking about their experiences, talking about how for various reasons that their calculations, and this isn't the marketing calculations, this was their internal IT business case calculations, that they found out that having Macs were actually saving them a couple $100 per user a year.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah. Like the hardware may be $1,000 more expensive, but there are various other things that either you don't need or because certain things are more robust and for various reasons that it saved the money. And, you know, I say that even with all the reservations that you and I always have about anytime somebody talks up money savings, the bullshit filter goes up.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it depends on how that information is delivered, right? If it's delivered in the form of like Gartner says, or if it's delivered in the form of, you know, a marketing slick handed out at a conference, then, you know, that's when the bullshit meter starts to move. But still, just to get, I mean, I'd love to see the math. Did they put out the math? Did they actually show that breakdown in a way that doesn't make you laugh?
They they talked a lot. I don't know that they showed all the math, but they talked a lot about what went into it. And also, really, if you just want an interesting peek at just doing massive numbers of Macs, I think they're up to 90,000 of them now. So it, the presentation I linked from my Jamf blog post from a week or two ago. So it really is worth the time to go watch that presentation.
All right, I want to find that data because the very first thing I look for in those things are estimations, they're soft costs. Because, you know, once you start ascribing a dollar value to time saved by not having to babysit office updates, like that's now, you know, that's when the numbers get a little screwy. That's when I stop trusting the numbers that I see. But either way, that'd be interesting. Yeah. So,
and this is something that, of course, like the mainstream tech press picked up on this too. So, and so at the same time, like in the last 18 months or so, Jamf doubled their number of customers. So that's great. You know, the Jamf they're in Wisconsin. Wait, Wisconsin or Minnesota? Shoot.
Oh man. Some state's going to be mad at you.
Somebody's going to be, yeah.
you're either going to get sausages thrown at you or cheese curds. Either way, there's
they're delicious
thrown at you. Yeah. So that came out of there. I was pulling up something else that you had mentioned here too in our show notes, and that was Fleet Smith. Which is this like other Jamf?
Yeah, so I was thinking like, do they know about Jamf? But the
this is like all those DAS providers you send. You send me once a week. You send me an email from some new DAS provider that acts like they invented virtual desktops. So like they're just unaware that the rest of the world can do this because they're like, look, it's your computer, but it's not running locally. But they don't use words like that. this because you read this Fleet Smith stuff and it looks like Jamf.
So their big difference is that it's, you know, if you were to build a Mac management platform in 2016 versus one that's been coming along for 10 or 15 years or so.
Okay.
So we're the modern born in the cloud Mac management platform. And so I think that's one of the main differences.
Gotcha. I want to talk about that, but I just pulled up the like about page on Jamf.com and they literally have a picture of both Minnesota and Wisconsin. So we're safe. they're in both places. So, all right. So 2016 Mac management versus old timey Mac management. Do you know anything technical about Fleet Smith? Is this using like the MDM API that's in OS X, or is this more agent based? It's just newer.
I mean, it is
new way of thinking.
It is agent based because just like with Windows 10, if you're just doing MDM based management, then there's really a lot of gaps that you really need to do. So, and which it's kind of interesting that seeing all the innovation in blending MDM and agent-based management on the Windows side, I'm wondering if we're ripe to see something like that on the Mac side. And on the one hand, like clearly look at Jamf's doubling of customers in the last 18 months. And how IBM has 90,000 Macs out. Like, clearly there's a market for there. So I'm guessing there's plenty of space for Fleet Smith to do their thing. And if AirWatch starts pushing Mac management more, this year at AirWatch Connect, I don't think Mac management got mentioned. If it did get mentioned in the keynotes, it was very little. It was definitely not a focus of the show.
All this makes sense. I mean, with the uptick in Jamf sales and interest in managing Macs, just because, you know, as recently as 5 years ago, and certainly back before then, there weren't enough Macs to be out of control, right? It was manageably unmanageable. There were, you know, you knew who all the users were, and you know, you keep an eye on them, but you knew that they were probably power users using it for a very specific reason, and so they were, you know, you could deal with it. But now we're to the point where, I mean, even if it's not BYO, even if it's people getting Macs like through their company, like you and I have done, the need to actually get a grip on all these things has definitely risen in the last couple of years. So that all makes sense to me.
So the question is it a matter of absolute numbers? Like how many enterprise Macs out there that are there that really need to be managed? And think of the absolute numbers of enterprise Macs versus enterprise Windows desktops.
Right. I guess it's just a big enough market that, you know, we can have more than one or two companies now.
Yeah.
And it's missing beta, it looks like, too. Is this one of those perpetual beta things where it's just always in beta? Or is it just that new?
No, they just came out of stealth last Tuesday or Wednesday, I think.
Okay. Yeah, so this will be interesting. I would like to try this out. And, yeah, I mean, because now, like, there's a lot of Macs floating around my house. You know, like, I look at this and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to manage all these. I can't imagine having to manage more and more and more of them from a corporate perspective. And so now, how many of those need to be managed? I don't know. That's a different question, because you could ask the same thing about your Windows desktops. And how many need to be managed versus how many need to be managed in that classic way versus how many need to be or can be managed in some new way. That's a different discussion for a different time, I think. But certainly there are plenty of organizations out there that are going to want something like this on their Macs.
Yeah, and as long as organizations they're thinking about their EMM, they're thinking about their IDAS, they're thinking about their Windows 10, it makes sense that now in 2016, or more likely really 2017 or 2018, is probably a good time to rein in some of those rogue Macs.
Yeah. Now there's going to be a whole bunch of people that are out there saying, don't manage anything and just secure everything on the back end. And, you know, but you still have users to put up with. And so, you know, if this is just making your life easier, managing the users by managing the devices that they're on. Yeah. I'm a fan.
Yeah. There we go. So we're coming up on 55 minutes. Two more things that I think that I wanted to get to. So have I told you that I'm working with a Windows phone right now?
Okay. So you and I talked on the phone last week, and I think I heard you mention that you were using a Windows phone, and I tried to just tune it out because I couldn't believe it, because I thought you were telling me you were going with a iPhone 7 Plus, and I just didn't want to believe it to be true. But so you have a Windows phone, Jack, huh? Again?
Well,
didn't you learn your lesson the last time?
I also have an iPhone 7 Plus, and it is glorious.
Glorious. Okay.
But Windows Phone 10, you know, I want to go into this with as open of a mind as possible. And really, there are a lot of great things about Windows 10 Phone, which is the official name of the... Windows 10 Mobile, which is the official name of the operating system now. But still, it's for the last 5 years, it kind of still has the same issues that we've always talked about. Like, yeah, it has a reasonable number of modern mobile operating system features, but a lot of the features are still a year or two behind what iOS and Android has. And the app gap of not having all the apps, or like the version of Facebook or Uber or even the big popular apps that are there, they're just not as smooth and they just crash more. So it's...
Okay, look, we understand the direction that Microsoft is trying to go here, and I just don't think that they can do it. I mean, the MO for Microsoft in the past has been, let a technology get mature and then do that, and then people will just use Microsoft's version of it. Because they already have such a, you know, ingrained relationship with Microsoft, and Microsoft does a good job. And so, but like, are they really, what's their end game here? What's their goal? Is their goal to compete legitimately with iOS and Android devices? Because if it is, my goodness, they have a long ways to go.
And they've lost ground over the last few years.
Did they really, at what point did they have ground to lose?
I think a year or two they were, you know, at 3 or 4% in some markets, and now they're more like 1%. There's actually
all of those are within the margin of error.
there was just before this podcast, I happened to read some parts of a Mary Jo Foley article, and Windows 10 phone did come up, and it seems like it's less of a big project and more that keeping it maintained and keeping their experience working with ARM devices especially it's important development work for the overall health of the whole big universal Windows platform.
Mm-hmm. I guess.
So you can see how that would be. And, you know, so one other thing on the devices side, then, so the other big thing that happened is that we found out that BlackBerry is no longer going to be doing their own hardware development. Did you see that?
I did see that, although I didn't actually read the thing. I did see it come across the wire, though, and I think it was just about to take off when it came through. So what's up with that?
Well, so this again was kind of one of their... Sometimes the messages as they come out are kind of confusing because, and of course, like I feel sorry that they're in a situation where anything that they say, no matter what, even when it's good news, everybody just jumps all over them because they're BlackBerry. And I kind of feel bad that happens sometimes. So of course, when this news came out, it was like, oh, finally, no more BlackBerries. And it's like, well, no, that's not what that means, because they still had a few more Android devices that they had developed yet to release. So the BlackBerry DTEC 60 just came out like 2 weeks ago. And it turns out they'll be licensing the software and the name to other manufacturers, and they're going to be even maintaining the BB10 OS for another year or two. So there will still be BlackBerries floating around for those that want them.
Hang on. So wait, this phone came out, like you can go buy this phone today?
The DTEC 60, yes.
Okay. There was, and I thought I was mishearing this, but on my flight to Cleveland to go hang out during the World Series, I connected in Chicago, which was a stupid idea. Because the plane was half Cubs fans, half Indians fans. It was kind of cool. It was like a team plane. But I was surrounded by Cubs fans back in steerage, like all the people that booked at the last second. And the guy that sat next to me was talking to some friend like three rows away very loudly about his new BlackBerry that he got. And I was floored that anybody would even seek that out and be like a new one. And so this must have been what he had then, because it kind of just looked like an iPhone to me. So, or, you know, like a other random smartphone. So that's what this thing was. It was I've spotted one in the wild.
Yeah. Well, so there's the Priv, the one with the slide out keyboard that came out earlier this year. And then there was the DTEC 50 that came out a couple months ago. And then the 60 came out. And there's rumors of one more, the 70, which will have a keyboard again.
Oh, you know, maybe this is the 50 then, because it looks like the 60 just came out like a week ago or within the last few days, actually. But yeah, this one definitely didn't have a keyboard. I was just surprised to see it out there. So that's kind of cool. But they're not. I just like how the news gets overhyped. They're like BlackBerry shutting down. They're shutting down all hardware.
Versus there's still going to be various devices floating around, and you know that's fine. They can, that's their prerogative, and they seem to be fairly pragmatic about it. The thing is, I wonder if all the constant drama about and attention about what they're doing with devices is bad for their on the EMM stuff. I mean, at the very least, it has to be just distracting when you open a website and see people saying bad things about BlackBerry when, you know, I wrote earlier this year, they've been working to, after they acquired Good Technology, they've been working to integrate Good and Bez at a pretty good clip, and it seems like it's going pretty well.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you would have told me 3 years ago or 4 years ago that BlackBerry would still be in business today, I'd have laughed. So I think on that alone, they've done a pretty good job of sticking around and doing what they need to do to keep their customers, you know, keep them writing the checks. And so they're not making phones for no reason. They're making phones because they've got people asking for phones. And you know, as long as they, you know, if they keep doing that and they don't get too out of control with it, you know, they're not out there trying to, they're not out there having these giant launch events and, you know, getting people worked up about the specs of the camera on the D-Tech 50. Right. But they're making the phones because their customers want them to. And then all the while they're also focusing on, you know, a good EMM platform, which should, you know, that's the thing that they're going to ride into the future. So
yeah,
good for them.
Well, QNX and IoT stuff and
sure. Yep.
BBM and all sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for them. No doubt.
So this has been an hour.
Yeah, that's crazy. It went fast and it was actually way more relaxing because we didn't do it live. Like constantly worried about the internet dropping out and stuff. So
I will see you next week in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, man, that's next week. I got to book my flight for that.
Yeah, that is. So next week for, you know, I'm really looking forward to this a lot because we're taking our usual roadshow event and adding beer and making it in the evening.
Yeah, that's the dream. It's what we've always wanted. They frowned upon us having beer at 8 o'clock in the morning when these things started normally. But yeah, I wrote about this maybe a month or so ago. But yeah, we're going to hang out in a bar on Thursday the 17th in DC. We're going to talk about all of EUC or as much of it as we can in an hour and a half or two. And then we're going to interact with our sponsors in a different way as well. You know, we're actually going to sit down and interview them instead of just having them give a 10 or 15 minute presentation about something. We're actually going to try to, you know, we'll ask them questions and we'll interact with the audience and we're going to try to kind of get to the bottom. We're not the normal 15 minute marketing, you know, elevator speech, but we're going to talk to them and get down to some nitty gritty and maybe even into some, how they can affect some specific use cases. So I believe Tintree is our primary sponsor this time around for VDI, for the show in Washington, DC. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. I need to go book flights for that now.
Yeah. And so the other thing that I was going to plug, on the site lately, you might've noticed our series of Friday notebook posts, which I'm finding incredibly useful as a way of just keeping track of everything that's going on. This is our weekly roundup where we do those various stories where there's more than, maybe we want to do more than just tweet about them, but maybe not always enough for us to focus on a full article. So we sort of keep a running list of everything that's going on in the industry. Those have been a lot of fun. And also, the other thing that you might have noticed around the site is that we've been having some more freelance contributors. Earlier on in the fall, we had Teresa Miller, Briform speaker, and this last week we had another one by Tim Mangan and Mike Nelson. And this is really cool because I can go out and find topics that I want to know more about and find a writer and say, hey, can you write about this and enlighten us. So that's been fun.
Yeah, it's something we haven't really ever done it before. We've had some guest posts here and there, but to have these sort of commissioned pieces out there that we can ask people to dig deeper on while we're doing, you know, the other things that we do, That's yeah. It's been really great to get these other perspectives and to get some just new faces on the site. So if you're listening to this and you have something, you know, if you want to be added to the list of people that we can consult for freelance articles, you know, let us know. Let Jack know. Jack's the guy that's pulling all the strings behind the scenes for that. So if let Jack know, and we can you know, we'll talk to you. We pay money for them. So we can, I'm sure we can, you know, work something out, because yeah, it really is great having all this extra content out there.
Yeah. Well, with that, any other final notes?
Not really, nothing new to bring up. I mentioned before at the very beginning of this thing, we were talking about, how VMware had announced their Skype for Business plugin or their Skype for Business feature, and how that is what that's the thing that spurred that whole conversation about has VMware caught up with Citrix and things like that. And that feature is not out yet, so it kind of remains to be seen exactly how that thing, how it actually works, how it's implemented. There was a real quick video that VMware showed about it, but you know, I'm sure they were using Skype via Horizon, but you know, to what degree that feature has been developed and how that compares to Citrix is kind of up in the air still. Citrix has been around for a while now, and they've actually done quite a few things with their Skype for Business plugin that make it very enterprise ready with regards to like how their customers are actually using it. And they've gone back to the drawing board and developed some extra features and stuff for it. So we'll see if VMware gets there with the first release, which should come out next year, or you know, if it's going to be a bit of a process for them.
And I'm sure we'll have some people in our community that will be doing all sorts of tests of that.
Oh, without a doubt. So, but yeah, I left that bit out before. And so, I want to make sure I get that in there now. So all of that, I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that that remains to be seen, but really it just comes down to the use cases again. And I think that for the vast, vast majority of use cases, I think they're pretty well even now. And that really is just the point. Like it comes down to the tiny minute details, that dictate which one you go to versus the other. So, but other than that, yeah, I got nothing. You had mentioned before we started this, you were testing an HP Elite X3. Do you have any quick thoughts on this?
So this is the one that it docks into this is the Windows Phone 10
this
device.
Is the phone. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We never actually got into the phone. We went right onto the BlackBerry, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. We spent some time on Windows 10 mobile itself.
Right.
And so while Windows 10 mobile, of course, has those conditions that we knew about going into it, this thing, like the dock, you put it in a dock and you're using keyboard and mouse, like to actually be using Continuum in the way that Microsoft was first talking about it with Windows 10. And it's pretty cool. So I've been thinking a lot about what types of use cases this might be useful for and what the place, and looking at some details of the hardware and stuff. So stay tuned for full comments in the next few weeks.
It's going to be the same as all of them, right? It's going to be like manufacturing, warehouses, stuff like that, I bet. Not every business user is going to have one of these in their pocket, and it's going to become their primary client, and they're going to just travel with this and not a laptop or a tablet. And that was the promise of their Nirvana phone, and I'm so soured on the entire concept that I'm just negative right out the gate. But yeah. So I'm hopeful that you can come up with something that is, you know, compelling for one of these things, because otherwise, I'll wait for the next one. But hey, maybe I'll be wowed. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, with that, I think we should thank everybody very much for listening.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, we'll try to get back in December for our monthly. We're setting our sights high and aiming for monthly podcasts. So, but yeah, thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks. Bye.